morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And today we're going to talk about everything from Chef Andre's morning aid workers to Aramco's contracts to Amazon's shares. We've got a lot in the pipeline
Meta,
today.
Meta, Netflix, all the big boys this morning.
All the big boys are kind of in trouble, more or less.
Yeah.
One big boy's doing well,
if
but more or less.
If talking about them, they're in trouble, yeah.
someone is in trouble in the startup ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I know you spoke about it briefly yesterday with Saima, but Yusuf Al-Barqawi is not that happy with us today, is he?
Is he not? Well, so we talked about yesterday, Alfie, and I think we'll do a few follow-ups, but anyone wants to listen to that segment yesterday, we talked about like all the Alfie, what happened there, and
it's a startup, it's an HR tech startup, and they shut down, and sources told us that investors were unhappy and concerned with the management of funds. They raised $2.5 million, apparently did not get the full funds for that. It's an interesting story, though, because we're getting a lot of comments.
It's a developing story. And yeah. I think that's the, you know, that's why we're doing Smashy Business, is to tell these stories through and full. You know, I remember as a young student, I studied economics, Lubna. I had a year in Germany, right?
Yeah.
And my German wasn't good.
Yeah.
So I would pick up, on the way into the lecture hall every day, I would pick up the only, this is before social media, mobile phones.
Yeah.
So I'd pick up the only, like, and people didn't speak English to me, so I'd pick up the Wall Street Journal, it was free, in the Wirtschaft department, in the economic department, and I would read it every day. And do you know what I loved about it? That they carried stories through like a serial, like a series.
Uh-huh.
And they had a reporter in like the court. And every day, the iconic Wall Street Journal illustration of someone's face, that little drawing,
mm-hmm.
and every day, and nowhere else in the world was this a story except another page of the WSJ every day. And I just loved how business stories evolved over time, how the pieces came together. So I think, and you know, I know that you know, and you're smiling. I know that you know you've got a story to run with. So we won't talk about it at length because we do have a guest outside, but follow Smashy Business because let's just say, watch this space, Alfie, watch this space.
Yeah, watch it, exactly. okay, I love that. And by the way, are you okay after studying in Germany? Did you need any therapy? Because the Germans are not the easiest people to deal with. I know my sister works for a German company. I'm not going to name them. But yeah.
No, I had a brilliant experience.
Really?
Yeah, totally. I think you can get really into, I love the German culture. And I wanted to move there. No one gave me a job. But I really think that the stereotype is false once you live there. Like, I get it. The culture is different in different parts of the world. But like Bavaria and the food and the nature and the lifestyle, I really liked it.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. We can talk about it a little bit more.
But I guess they're definitely distinctive culture. I agree.
Same with Russians, I guess. People think that they're very cold and stuff, but they're actually very friendly. They're just very straightforward.
True. And people who, immigrants or foreigners who live in Russia get to like it. You know?
Yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just have to embrace it. Yeah.
True. Right. So a Dubai restaurant owner, Chef Jose Andres, he has been mourning the death of 7 World Central Kitchen workers who died in an airstrike, in an IDF airstrike in Gaza. He's Spanish American. He's the owner of Spanish restaurant Jaleo in Dubai. It's in the Atlantis.
I ate there actually recently.
Yeah.
You know, people who pronounce Spanish words well will pronounce that differently.
Yeah, because definitely that's not, what is it? Jaleo?
Yes, about that. I know.
Jaleo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Better attempt than me, yeah.
right, so.
But he was here, you know, at the big kind of Beyonce opening this time last year. He was here.
Yeah.
With Nobu, like it was one of the big restaurants opening.
He's a celebrity chef. I mean, he's very well known. And
And his World Central Kitchen thing got real big at the time of the Russia-Ukraine because I know he was interviewed a lot in the U.S. about what he was doing there as well.
Yeah. You're right. I did read about that. I mean, here's the thing, right? And we'll let me. I'll continue a little bit about the story, and then I'll say why this is. He's receiving backlash now as well because some people are saying actually he's a Zionist and he's pro-Israel. But he. His restaurant, by the way, is at the Royal Atlantis. He's famous for his humanitarian work. As you mentioned, he is the founder of the World Central Kitchen. And in a recent heartbreaking strategy, a targeted Israeli airstrike on the World Central Kitchen's vehicle in Gaza killed seven humanitarian aid workers. They were delivering meals to Gazans in need. And he is heartbroken about it. He's calling for an immediate halt to the execution of innocent people in Gaza. He's calling out the Israeli government for, he's saying this is a war crime. He said these are angels, they're not faceless, they're not nameless. These are angels who were just helping innocent people and giving them foods. Mm. However, he's also receiving backlash for this because people are saying, oh, you only care now because it's your people who have died in this airstrike. You have been, you know, openly on Twitter, on X, pro the Israeli regime. You have used this consistently, the do you condemn Hamas line. So those tweets are resurfacing now. Does it really matter? Personally, I don't think that it matters. There is another exclusive story in The Guardian talking about AI is being used to target civilians as well in Gaza. But what do you think of the chef? And what do you think of the backlash that he's receiving now? Because what's most important is that this story is getting attention, I think.
I agree. I think there's a few layers to it, and you covered it quite well. There is the... You know, there's a lot of media coverage in the UK particularly because there's three British citizens who were, you know, the comments from the IDF and from the US are this is being investigated, and let's respect investigations. But I think it's pretty clear for everyone to see the data, the visuals are there that these were targeted strikes. And the second story you mentioned that they're using AI to help with the targeting strikes of drones and remove the human aspect of it. You know, we know where technology is today, and this isn't the first time in war that technology has been done by drones. You know, we see it in movies, we've seen how it's documented, and to see that AI is getting data to target 37,000 suspects, it really makes you worried, you know? And I think The Guardian have done a huge expose on this technology called Lavender.
Yep.
And, you know, these are this is a tech-savvy nation. This is a tech-savvy, highly invested military. And it's very concerning, this breaking story around AI. And I think it should concern everyone around the world that AI can be used to this level. And then on the humanitarian side, you know, there are so many different theories, and it's so hard to believe everything and who's pro and who's this and who's that. But, you know, I think what we have to do is take some of this at face value, that the World Central Kitchen, if I'm signing up to that, I'm signing up to help people. If I'm going to deliver meals for iftar, I'm going to deliver meals for iftar. If I'm going to a country that's going through something like this to help with a charity, sure, you know, there might be many reports around the world that saying charities aren't good or bad, but like it's a charity. Yeah. It helps people who are, this is a famine zone basically, yeah. Right? It helps people who are starving, and it's trying to get aid in. It's like when the UN, you know, when they were saying that
in
these
Norway,
people, when they're saying that these people are terrorists, they're not actually, right? Like the face of it, they're trying to help. It's humanitarian aid, and there might be different agendas. Just like, you know, the UAE does so well with humanitarian, and when they do send things, people comment and say, "Oh, but, yeah, but like, can we not just applaud that there's humanitarian aid going?" Like,
absolutely.
If I gave my
and
time,
and it's being paused now because of this, right?
Totally, and that, you know, and that's the worry, isn't it? But it's like, Lubna, if you do a charitable thing and then people criticize you for posting a photo of it or whatever, they're at their desks, they're in their sofa throwing shade, and you're out there doing the work.
Yeah.
So I think he has to be applauded. Like, there's many chefs around the world who aren't raising funds, who aren't getting free food in there, and he's not okay. He might have an ego, and his brand might, he might like attention, but he's still doing this stuff rather than the pure profit restaurants, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's give a little bit more info about Lavender, which is the AI driven program. That The Guardian has exposed Israel to be using Lavender to facilitate the carpet bombing of Gaza over the past 6 months. It's incredible to see this in The Guardian as well, because the perspective of you know, UK and US media has really, really shifted, and how can it not? So it's been...
The Guardian actually have done a good job from the start on this one.
Really?
Yeah, they actually have. Yeah, they've, okay. You know, and for years I didn't
kind
think...
Kind of disagree, but...
Look at it. Look at it from... And it's British media. It's British media, and definitely the narrative changed, but yeah. I think from what I've seen, I turned off The Guardian for a while. Like, from what I've seen, the way that they've covered this story in particularly has been different to the rest of British media, different to the BBC, different
to
others.
True. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So the program had tagged around 37,000 Ghazans as suspected militants. And it permitted up to, and this is really where it gets really ugly, permitted up to 100 civilian casualties per attack. If the suspected target is of high profile. 100 civilian casualties per attack, that's huge.
There's another AI software called The Gospel, which recommends buildings and structures. Like, I'm smiling because I just can't really fathom this stuff. And, you know, I heard this from someone who's big into AI, that AI technologies used together can have be even more powerful in terms of their goals. So the fact that you're using one to get data around suspects or people, and then another one to target buildings and things like that is worrying.
It is very, very worrying. Even more worrying is, I mean, not just AI, but all of these big tech companies. Like, now we found out that there's another privacy scandal with Meta and Netflix, where allegedly Meta has allowed Netflix to read private messages of its users on Facebook.
When I saw this story, I didn't believe it. I genuinely didn't believe it. First of all, that Facebook, who've been through all the Analytica, all the worries about privacy, like they're paranoid about any privacy leak.
Yeah.
And Netflix, who are also image conscious, the fact that they would, and $100 million is nothing to Facebook. They make almost $100 billion. So why would they sell access, and they don't let anyone touch their DMs? They don't let any other company. Why would they let Netflix for a measly $100 million read all the private messages of users? I couldn't believe it, to be honest.
I mean, I don't know. Is it true? Is it not true? There are documents, you know, showing this. Meta have denied it. They said it's shockingly untrue. Elon Musk, of course, jumped on the bandwagon of this, as he always does. And he's saying that it is true. And he's, you know, I love the game that he plays, because it's just so... He really has fun with it, doesn't he? He really has fun with it.
He has fun with it, but he has an agenda as well.
Absolutely, exactly, which is the best part, is having an agenda and having fun with it. I mean, he's just wickedly... His MO is wickedly delicious. I'll put it like that. The document alleges a special relationship between Netflix and Facebook, and this goes back to what you were saying. I suggest Facebook reduced spending on original programming for Facebook Watch to avoid competing with Netflix, a major advertiser on the platform. Mm. So Netflix is a major advertiser on the platform. I guess that kind of answers your question. Meta doesn't want specific people to touch their data, but when it's in their favor, I guess. Mm. You know, they have had privacy concerns in the past. So I don't know, is it shocking really?
I mean, the 100 million fee to cause another scandal, like they paid this amount of money in the, you know, they're sued in Europe, they're even Apple now are being sued in the US, but for the privacy thing, I would, the way the headline has been written, not by us, but elsewhere, that Facebook lets Netflix access users' private messages for a measly 100 million. Like, I think there's more to it than that. But as you said, like, there's agendas everywhere. And if the cozy relationship, if Netflix are giving Meta some cash, so you stay in your lane, boys. You do your UGC content, and let us do the premium stuff. Because, you know, like, Netflix did launch Facebook did launch a watch section years ago. They paid Huda Beauty lots of money, and they had a launch party in Dubai for Huda Boss for a web series, and we haven't seen any since. So maybe, you know, Dubai Bling isn't on the Facebook watch section. It's on Netflix, and that's the kind of evolution of this stuff. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows? No, interesting stuff. I think it is worth looking into, actually.
But you're right about Elon Musk, and, you know, he attacks Disney all the time. He doesn't like Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, who himself is under pressure at the moment. Nelson Peltz, the activist investor, wants shake-up at Disney. And Nelson Peltz in his 80s, there's a really good lunch with FT with him recently. And Bob Iger is 74, the returning CEO, and he's trying to find a succession plan. He's trying to fix all Disney's problems. And there's been shareholder votes this week that Iger is coming out on top because Nelson Peltz wants to get more votes so he can have more power.
Yeah.
He's done it with P&G over the years. He's done it with other companies that activist investors basically come in with an agenda. And they don't run the company, but they put pressure on for have their interests. And that's what he's trying to do. But Elon Musk doesn't like Bob Iger. So Bob Iger is under pressure from all angles.
Yeah.
And on April Fool's, Elon Musk, and he's also kind of anti-woke, for want of a better description. So on April Fool's, he said he's the newly appointed DEI executive, head of diversity, equity, and inclusion at Netflix.
Yeah.
Sorry, at Disney.
At Disney, yeah.
Who themselves have had their own DEI and LGBTQ issues with the Don't Say Gay Bill in Texas, was it? Or California?
I'm not sure.
Florida.
To be honest. Florida?
Or Texas. One of the states last year. It was one of the things that brought Bob Chapek down. And they've had lots of... Disney Plus, MENA, today relaunched their logo in Arabic. But they've had a lot of struggles to adapt to this market.
Yeah.
And they've relaunched their logo and announced originals. But there's a story in there somewhere for us.
They're always a step behind Netflix, always. Like, Netflix has really done so great in that aspect of, like, the local, the originals. And
to a degree. They didn't set up an office here. They're in Amsterdam. They haven't really, like, they do more PR here than they do content. They've done one or two deals with Telfaz, but it doesn't really compare. Like, I watch a lot of Arabic shows, and they're outnumbered 100-1 by Shahid. Like, Shahid have really killed
them. Yeah, but Shahid is, you know, Shahid is Arabic primarily, right? Whereas Netflix is English.
Doesn't have to be, right? Really, yeah. Like, there's no fresh programming on Netflix for Ramadan. Like, maybe, like, there's nothing
that's
there.
That's true. Yeah, okay, good point. Yeah, good point.
I don't know. Netflix are a step ahead with Disney Plus, but Shahid have really owned the market. And it shows in the numbers. Shahid have more subscribers than Netflix. And in most other countries in the world, Netflix are the ones with the most subscribers. Everyone else is playing catch up. But just the point about movies and censorship and stuff that Disney won't do, I think we can look into a lot of that programming stuff in the future.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, absolutely. Cool. At the end, we can talk a little bit about Swvl because I got some new info about them and we were talking about them the other day. Finally, they're profitable. But before we move on to that, Aramco has awarded $7.2 billion in contracts for the expansion of the Fadhili gas plant in Saudi Arabia. I really hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. So Samsung E&A has won its largest ever contract worth $6 billion for Aramco's gas increment program. The project aims to expand the existing capacity of the gas plant located northeast of Saudi Arabia's capital, Riyadh.
Also northeast is where how do you pronounce it? Not Qadiyah, the Murabba. How do you pronounce it? The
new Murabba. Yeah. Murabba. Yes.
That's also in that northeast district. But so Aramco are
true.
Aramco's history obviously is oil, and Sabic, which they tried to acquire a bit of, history is gas. There's other big gas companies in Saudi, but this is a huge gas contract and there's different types of gas that obviously, you know, have made Qatar really successful. What do you call it? LN, what's the acronym for the type of gas? I should know. Anyway, so this is another reason why, you know, Saudi is one to watch with energy in the future and the different types of energy as well.
I think there's also been, if I'm not mistaken, a meeting with OPEC, and it says it's going to keep output policy steady as oil nears $90 a barrel. That was just a couple of hours ago.
Interesting. They're not cutting, are they? They're keeping it. They cut a while ago, and then they're keeping. They're not increasing the supply of oils.
Yeah.
And the price is going up because it was around 75 for a while, but like getting it up to $100 per barrel. Like they used to talk about the break even of the Saudi budget, but as Saudi gets extra revenue, there's going to be less pressure, a And this is the whole thing of diversification away from oil.
Yeah, which, speaking of oil, we should have an oil expert on the show, and I have just the right person, so maybe we can do that next time.
Okay.
Because OPEC Plus is, OPEC was really kind of interesting to speak about, and how the West views them as well, and moving forward, what it's going to be like. Swvl. We were talking about Swvl the other day because the co-founder put out a very kind of emotional message, saying that nobody believed in us. You know, they've had their ups and downs. I learned something interesting of how Swvl went from $150 million dollars valuation to then, what was it, $1.4 billion, something like that? Was that correct? I hope I'm getting the numbers right here. But why did that jump happen? I learned that jump happened because they got the best ad ever. Sheikh Mohammed actually put out a tweet, and that really helped them. That really helped kind of just the business just
really
skyrocket.
That's interesting.
Put out a tweet saying, yeah, "I'm so proud that we have an Arab, founder doing amazing things in the startup sector."
Let's cover it. Nice one. Yeah, it's good to, exactly. We did talk about that. We did talk about the dual listing, the NASDAQ and the DFM.
Yeah.
So Swvl, obviously out of Egypt, but their presence in the UAE isn't Abu Dhabi, isn't ADX. It's DIFC and it's DFM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dubai-based startup.
Yeah, exactly. But that is really the best advertisement, getting Sheikh Mohammed to,
seal of approval, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
He met a lot of media people last night, Lubna. We weren't invited.
Oh, no. Mm. Oh, no.
So we had it before, and we need that seal of approval again in the future. But I think we just need to keep up the work that we're doing and heroing these companies like he does as well, because startups are so important.
Yeah. Starting with Alfie.
You make me laugh, but the book on my desk is the Sheikh CEO, and the startup, it's why the city attracts so many entrepreneurs, because there's such a, in terms of a leader and really staying out of the geopolitical stuff and focusing on building new things. A quote I read this morning was from a Saudi businessman saying when they announced things like the Palm Jumeirah or this or that. And I thought of Museum of the Future. The Museum of the Future, Lubna, was like, it was basically like a 3D type thing at, I'll get this right, at one of the world government summits. And when it was supposed to be like a little announcement. And when he saw it, he's like, no, we want to make that.
Right.
Go and make it.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
The calligraphy, the local guy, the artist who begins with M, he has those nice blue horses in Al Nassim Hotel. It's
the same artist
who designed the verses outside, the verses of quotes from
Matar bin Lahij, Emirati artist. Yeah.
Brilliant artist, yeah. Matar bin Lahij. He's got a good gallery as well. So it's His Highness's quotes outside the Museum of the Future that this artist transcribed. So, and that became a project. But the Saudi businessman said, we used to roll our eyes up to heaven when we would hear, we'd roll our eyes, to God, when we would hear the ideas coming out of Dubai, as if that'll never happen.
Right.
And now when they happen, he's earned the respect of everyone, because
Absolutely.
Dubai really has done that.
Yeah.
And so, and totally, we do need success stories, and we were singing the praises of Swvl lately, that they got through that 7-year bump, and, hopefully we'll have good HR tech in the future, like Bezat and others.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Who's the guest today?
Who always pay their staff on time. Our guest today is Ravi Birani, I also hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, of Annex Developments. We're going to talk everything real estate coming up next. Stay tuned. Welcome, Ravi. How do I pronounce your last name?
Birani, Ravi Birani.
Birani. Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. So I wasn't that far off. Okay, cool.
you pronounce well, actually. Yeah. I was listening to you there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll take that compliment. Annex Holdings and Developments.
Yeah.
So Annex Developments is part of Annex Holdings.
Exactly.
And you guys have been working on a very interesting project.
Yes.
You were supposed to unveil, I believe, 15 projects by the end of next year, 2025. Exactly. Yeah, we'll talk about where you guys are with that, because you know, real estate companies are infamous for not delivering things on time. No judgment, no judgment. But Vento Tower, tell me about that. I'm just looking at the rendering here. Yeah. It's in Business Bay.
Yes.
Tell me about that, because it's very exclusive, very luxurious.
Dubna, first of all, we were planning to start something, to start in Dubai. We were looking for some good space to start our construction and development company. So our vision was to start something near around Business Bay and downtown area. So we find out a very nice place in Business Bay.
Yeah.
We like the location as well, and glad, we are glad that we got this land on 2021. Mm-hmm. And that time we have decided, you know, let's come into the market and start development. About Vento Tower, we were from the beginning, we were pretty sure that what we are going to deliver in the market, because we have find out the gaps between what people are missing and what developers are missing. The best part about this Vento Tower is, if you go to Business Bay area, you mostly find out one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom apartments, which is like a, I will not say that, you know, people don't want to go in the bigger space in Business Bay. Since Business Bay is an area where people, corporate people want to live.
Yeah.
So what we have focused in, you know, we should give only studio and one bedroom apartments. Mm-hmm. And that was the focus since beginning. But in one bedroom and studio apartment, we thought what people are missing and what they are looking for, you know, like
space.
Great lobby space and space. Balconies. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we focused on that.
Not like a prison. You
yeah.
know?
Not like a prison.
Those
yeah.
studios are looking horrendous. Yeah. yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you, how is yours? How are your studios and one bedrooms different?
To be honest, it's not that different, but something unique we are providing there. Like, let's say we have a huge balcony area, which people are missing in Business Bay. And you know, nowadays, yeah. Dubai weather is changing drastically, and you can see that the positive vibes are coming in the market. And mm-hmm. and even in the summer also, you'll not feel that heat.
Yeah, sure.
So people would want to go and sit in the, you know, balcony. So we focused on more on the spaceship in the balcony. And rather than giving just a simple balcony, we are providing them something to sit outside. And we are also, you know, focusing on sustainability and green things. So we are providing them a grass and greenery a little bit, and also something like a cushion you can sit and chill outside.
That's lovely. Yeah. Because we just had a story that, you know, Dubai Holdings in JBR.
Yeah.
Basically, JBR has been removing real plants and real
exactly.
grass and replacing it with you know, fake grass.
Yeah.
People are not happy about that. They want
a real grass,
the greenery and real grass. So, what kind of, you know, you talked about sustainability and greenery.
Yeah.
What are you providing? Is there like you know, these vertical kind of green walls?
Yes, we are focusing on majorly. We are, see, if you see, the best plant is money plant. You can put on the balcony area. You can even put inside the room. So what we are doing is we are focusing on the grass, which is real grass, and also mm-hmm. we are focusing on the money plant, which we can put on the balcony so that it looks beautiful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Even though we are focusing on some plants which have a good flowers and they will not get, you know, wasted in summertime, it's mm-hmm. easy to maintain also.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Absolutely. I had, I killed in my lifetime, I believe, 5 or 6 cacti. So I cannot even keep a cactus alive. I just wanted to.
You just need to give them
the,
a lot of positive
the shock
vibes.
On your face. Yeah, clearly I'm full of positivity, you know? Anyways,
yeah.
Tell me, so Vento Tower, when are you expecting to deliver, start delivering units?
Very good questions. So previously, when we started construction, there was a deadline. We wanted to deliver at 2025, October, something around. But since we started construction, there were some permissions and all, so 3-month delay, like we are targeting December 2025. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sure, I'm pretty sure that we will deliver before the time.
Mm-hmm.
We are just taking 2-3 months extra so that, you know, the customer will not have any objection and issues later on. This is our main focus, to deliver the project on time, because mm-hmm. I have seen a lot of developers, they are committing something and they are not able to deliver on time and client get frustrated. I'm not focusing on that. To
Absolutely.
Be honest, I'm bang focused on delivering project on time.
What about your future projects? I mean, this one has its own, you know, unique kind of selling points, which are the studios and the one bedroom.
Yes.
So just so I understand fully, the entire tower is offering only one bedroom and studios, or you do
no,
have?
No, only one bedroom and studios.
One bedroom and studios. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. How big are the studios?
So starting area is around 420 square feet, which is better than other buildings we have seen. And so we have read the market thoroughly and we checked everything. And what we are focusing on majorly is inch by inch using the space.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did, whatever the furniture we are providing it, we make sure that you will have ample space to go around the apartments and you will not feel that suffocating inside the apartment and you feel there is a lot of space. And even though we focus on the ceiling area also, the ceiling height is a little bit higher than the other projects.
Okay.
So it is already a spacious apartment.
Right. Yeah. Okay, and is that including the balcony or without the balcony?
Yes, no, balcony is separate.
Balcony is separate.
It's around 60-70 square feet area balcony.
Okay.
Depends if you are buying a studio, it's a 60-70. If you're buying a one bedroom, it's around 120 square feet area.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a very good spacious apartment, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What about your future projects? What's going to be unique about them and what are you planning?
Okay, so a very interesting question. Second thing, what we are going to start in Fujian. Since Fujian is not that luxury area and it's a very comfortable and okay area. So what we did
it's becoming really popular now.
Yes,
Fujian.
Now it's a popular area. Yeah. So we bought a land there and our second project would be in Fujian only. And there we are focusing on giving the best product in that particular area. Not focusing on something luxury or something, but yes, better quality, better thing, more space. And see, the best part about the Fujian area, you will have a metro now. So our project is between two metros. So even it's a walking distance from our project, 2 minutes or 3 minutes, that's it.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So Business Bay, Fujian, are there any other areas that you're looking at?
Yes, the third one is Meydan.
Meydan.
This will be the very good project and you can say that it will be ultra-luxury project. This project, we are focusing only on 3-bedroom and 4-bedroom mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we are in the stage of finalizing drawings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we are very clear what we are going to deliver in Meydan, since it's a very upcoming and very booming area and super luxury apartments you'll find there.
Yeah, yeah.
So many developers are coming and they are making the community. So we decided to start something from there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've been looking at duplexes and lofts here. And there are barely any duplexes and lofts in Dubai generally. There are very few in Dubai Marina and some of the older buildings. Around 2008.
Okay.
And then also in, I think, downtown, there's Jumeirah Living in downtown, around the World Trade Center area. There isn't a focus on that, and I'm surprised as to why. I'm just kind of curious as to why.
If you study the market and do a little deep dive, loft and duplexes are not that, in demand in the market. People are looking, rather than go to the villa, buy villa, if you want to go for a loft and duplex apartment in a building, I would suggest you go for a villa and buy townhouses, because same kind of feeling you will have in the apartment. You are paying double the amount what you are paying for the single apartment. Why you want to pay double amount? You just be smart.
Because you want to be in the city, I guess.
Yes, I totally understand.
Yeah.
But at
yeah.
the same time, in the same price, you will get a bigger space, better space, not duplex.
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't focus on the duplex now. Yes, of course, if you are making a penthouse, then something different.
Mm-hmm.
The penthouses, I think only one or two you can make in the building.
Yeah. Pray for me, Ravi, for the day I'm able to afford a penthouse. Let's take a moment.
Inshallah, you will buy a bigger property you have in there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Are you looking at Abu Dhabi? Abu Dhabi real estate is having its own moment.
Yes.
They announced a record sale just a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Is that somewhere that you're looking at?
To be honest, we are looking for a global, to diversify our business in global area. Like we have already projects in London, which is going on, two buildings there.
Uh-huh.
Definitely, we are looking for Abu Dhabi also. It's a developing city as well. And our major focus for next 2-3 years in Dubai only. And we want to deliver more than 15 projects by end of the 2025. And, and we have decided to buy another land. We are still looking for a good lands here. We have land bank almost around 7-8 projects we are already in our hand. But by maybe May or June, we will start looking for another land. Definitely, Abu Dhabi is on the plan, but I cannot commit now. Mm-hmm. I will take time for that only.
Okay, interesting. It seems that, yeah, the sky is the limit when it comes to real estate in Dubai.
You know, you get opportunity. We get a lot of opportunity from Russell Khaimah when they started developing area. Yeah,
that's my next question. Actually, are you looking at any land plots there?
To be
there?
Honest, no. Dubai, we love Dubai a lot. We don't want to go anywhere. Since the time I shifted to Dubai, it was just like a dream come true for me. And then I started my career and journey here. We started Annex Development, and we are thoroughly focused on that. That we will only develop in Dubai.
Yeah.
For the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, there is definitely opportunity for sure.
So many opportunities are there.
How are you seeing the market now, though? It's kind of correcting a little bit. The prices are not surging anymore. That's what we're seeing from the numbers.
It's not like that. Prices are definitely going up slowly, not like 2023 or 2022. Definitely prices are going up, even if you see lots of projects coming in the market, and they are slowly increasing, not like increasing drastically like 200 dirham per square feet or 300. Now they are increasing like 50 dirham per square feet, mm-hmm. 80 dirham per square feet.
Sure.
You see the how much luxury properties are there in the market now, when the moment they launch and it's already sold out.
And you guys are kind of focusing on affordable luxury.
Yes.
Giving people the opportunity.
It's very interesting. When you say affordable luxury, we are focusing on the things, when you want to go home and you want to see, you are in a hurry and you want to just put a light on, you just use your mobile and put the lights on and AC on. And something like when you sit in the apartment, you feel like, proper space and comfort. And when you go down to the lobby, you see the spacious area, you can sit there, you can have a meeting on the lobby, and it's mm-hmm. very spacious. And and we are trying
kind
to
kind of
make,
like what Rove Hotels did for the hospitality industry
true. We are focusing more luxury than the other brands here in Dubai. Mm-hmm.
What are the price points, let's say, to rent and to buy in Vento Tower?
Vento, if you see studio apartments, by the time it will deliver, the prices for studio apartment is easily around 110,000-120,000. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the one bedroom apartment, I can assure you that it will be around 140,000-150,000 dirhams.
Okay.
Because since we are giving a fully furnished apartment, and we are focusing on each and every brand what we are using there, it should be a very luxury. And at the end of the day, our target is to give a very good product to the people, and they feel satisfied when they are sitting inside the apartment. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And how big are the one bedroom apartments?
Starting is 780 square feet.
Okay.
Our balcony is separate.
That's I mean, I would say 140 for 140 for a one bedroom in Business Bay. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty expensive, probably.
Nowadays, if you check price in Dubai,
I think it's
I'm telling you, if you check price, no,
expensive.
No.
You can get now for rent in Downtown Views, 160K for a two bedroom.
I totally agree what you are saying now, but over the period of time, if you see the rental graph, it is drastically increasing day by day. Last year, the same apartment, you would have around 130,000-125,000 dirham. Mm-hmm. Now it's 160. By the time 2025, I saw the news yesterday, by the way. It was very interesting, Now, Dubai population is around 3.7 million. It mm-hmm. was not before like that, 2.6 million after the COVID.
Yeah.
So if you see the graph, within a year, we have increased like 1 million people in the Dubai. Mm-hmm. And where is the demand and supply? You can see that. We are not able to fulfill the supply. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of demand for one bedroom and two bedroom and studio apartments, especially people who are coming from out of the country. Everybody want to live in the downtown and Business Bay.
So
there's no apartments. For that particular reason, this is my assumption, by 2025, rental will be very, high.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And I'm not
Great
surprised
news.
If
news.
It will be more than 170, 180 for one bedroom apartment.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Gosh. That's a little bit depressing for me. However, for you, it's great news. I'm happy for you.
But why are you depressed? You also focus on the buying property. Don't go for the
buying
rental
property.
Apartment.
Yeah. Well, we'll have a chat after this. After the show. Thank you, Ravi. And I think affordable luxury is really gonna make its mark in the industry. Absolutely. Thank you for your time, Ravi Birani.
Yes.
Of Annex Developments. Thank you.
Thank you so much.